At the Table with Tony is brought to you by Trafe Hustlin'. That's www.traifhustlin.com. Your home for all things barbecue. All right, so welcome to the second episode of At the Table with Tony, the live stream edition. So this is something I'm doing new. This is something different that I have never done before. My second episode, so we're trying. If there's any unstable images that come through, I do apologize. But I want to thank the gentleman I have joining us today for coming on the show, taking some time out to talk about saints as our intercessors in the time of Corona. So today we have joining us, we have, I don't know what way it looks on the computer, but we have Eric Lavin. He is from Our Lady of Mount Carmel Church in Newark, New Jersey. We have Brendan Young of St. Anthony's Church in Buffalo, New York. We're also joined by Raymond Guarini, founder of the Italian Enclaves Historical Society. And we have Stephen LaRocca, he's the president of the St. Rocco Society of Potenza in New York City. And last but not least is Mark Antonio Pezzano. He's an Italian singer, an expert on Italian feasts, and he's also a trustee of Our Lady of the Assumption Society and feast that they have out on Long Island. So gentlemen, excuse me, thank you so much for taking time out to join us today to talk a little bit about the coronavirus, talk about the saints, and thank you all.
Thank you, Tony.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Oh, it's great to be here.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys. I think this is kind of an important topic to talk about because there's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of worry. There's a lot of hopelessness, and I think we need to bring more hope to the world, especially in this time. We see the numbers every day, and the numbers are going higher and higher from this terrible plague. And I think that now it's important to say, hey, wait a second. Let's think about the positive. Let's think about what especially as faithful Catholics, let's think about how we can welcome the saints more into our lives. So, gentlemen, I guess let's just start off by talking a little bit about why you're joining us today, who you are. So we'll start with Eric.
Well, I mean, my life, my relationship with the church has been something all my life. I credit my grandmother. She used to bring me to Mount Carmel in Newark way back when, and we actually still had the daily mass in Italian. That's how many Italians we had at that time. So I'm only 25, so it wasn't that long ago. But my devotion, I mean, obviously, I think the first thing we should address is, you know, what is a saint? Why do we go to a saint? Because I think there's a lot of misconceptions from people who are not Catholic as to why we pray to saints, you know, and they, you know, accuse us of idolatry and things like this. You know, obviously we know that a saint is an intermediary before God. Okay. So we are praying to God, but it's like, you got to call in somebody to do the favor, right? Almost like an Italian thing. I know somebody who could do this for me.
Right.
So I think once you understand that, and obviously I'm being a little bit lighthearted, but I think once you understand the fact that, you know, you have a special connection and a rapport and a relationship with the saint that you can pray to, I think this is what makes our topic today much more relevant to discuss.
So maybe you could start off by telling us what is a saint and talk a little bit about relics and stuff like that, and then we'll kind of move on from there.
Sure. Okay. So a saint is somebody recognized by the church who has, you know, lived an exemplary life, who gave tremendous example in many different aspects. And obviously, you know, there's this whole miracle requirement. So a saint, all the saints have many different gifts. Certain saints are known for certain things, they're known for others. So some were poor, some were not educated, some were... It's amazing to see because, you know, the communion of saints, the grouping of saints that the church has is really varied. It's beautiful also that we have in the church, you know, this concept and notion of relics, which is obviously a remain, a physical remain of a saint. So it could be their bones, their hair, it could be their clothes, a book, something like this. So they're broken up into grades and, you know, first class, second class, third class. And basically this tangible reminder that we have of a saint, once again, it's breaking away from this concept of idolatry. It's not that we worship this little piece of whatever. It's that we're asking this saint to please intercede for us before God. So I think that's also something very important to realize, because, you know, the church has this tradition and this concept, you know, in a procession you would see a priest walk with the relic and, you know, and the significance thereof. And I think that is very beautiful, because not only is it an actual piece of the saint too in your presence and your midst, but it's something that you could pray to and venerate.
Yes, absolutely. I just want to mention that Patrick O'Boyle, he just joined us on the line. Patrick, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Thank you for joining us. We're just getting started. We're talking about, Eric gave us a little introduction as to what is a saint, and talking a little bit about you know, how a saint is made. So, all right. So I think we should talk. We each of us have a saint or saints that are important in our lives. I know. For example, Stephen is extremely devoted to San Rocco, among many other saints. So, Stephen, talk a little bit about your connection to San Rocco, why he's so important to you, and also talk a little bit about the society that's in New York, which is one of the oldest in the country, right?
Yes, sir. Correct.
I think you're like the third oldest in the country.
It could be. God willing, August will be 131 years. So
I think it goes Hamilton, Mount right. Carmel, downtown Jersey City, and then St. Rocco.
Wow.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's okay, Pat. Anyway, I think of all the saints, in a sense, St. Rocco is the most relevant today, or one of the most relevant, because his cult came to, and cult, you know, again, we have to always worry what people think these words mean. The devotion to St. Rocco, so officially the cult of St. Rocco, spread to southern Italy during cholera epidemics, during the plague. He's the epicenter. It also seems to have scary connotations, but the epicenter of St. Rocco's devotion is from, you know, the towns south of Rome to Sicily. I mean, he's the southern Italian saint par excellence. And I think a lot of that has to do with he was introduced during these times of plagues, just like we're living through right now. So, I mean, he became part of our flesh and blood because of plagues, and here we are back in that state again. Also, I think his cult spread or maintained in the U.S. with such strength, not only because so many different towns, people from so many towns migrated to the United States, had him as their patron, but even those who might not have known him that well in Italy were drawn to him because he is the patron of the sick. And poor southern Italian immigrants had no medical care, were packed into tenements. There were contagious diseases and not. I mean, there were just a lot of sickness in our community. And he was one of the top go-to people. So he's always been in my life. He's my maternal family's patron saints from three different towns in Basilicata. So he's part of us from my birth. But I think he should be part of every Italian American, everybody's life. Naturally, I want everybody to love him. But I think he's super, super relevant now to the Italian American community because of the fact that we know him simply because there were plagues and his life is about it. It's not an after death association or some minor part of his story. His story is about the plague. He was the son of nobles in Montpellier in southern France. His parents died. He gave his money to the poor. He gave his title to his uncle. And he went to northern Italy, again, so terribly relevant now, to help plague victims and heal them with the sign of the cross and ultimately succumb to the disease himself. And that's why he shows his thigh, because the bubonic plague manifests on the skin, I think on the lower extremities mostly. And then we know that the dog came and fed him bread. And that's why he has a dog mixed in with bread in his mouth. He ultimately is found by the dog's owner and returns to his own country where, of course, having worked so hard and suffered so much, he didn't really look himself. And his uncle thought he was a spy and put him in prison. And he died in a prison cell. And the guard went in to feed him, had a disabled leg and kicked his body and said, you know, get up, it's time to eat, and realized he had died. And then as we believe the story goes, angels appeared and said, this is my servant Rocco. Whoever has the plague or other diseases, call upon him and he'll be healed. So it was a voice from God from heaven. So wow. And we don't have enough time for me to tell you the miracles I've seen, the form, not only for healing.
Tell us.
I mean, my own that brought me into, made me, I guess, or he made me the president of the St. Rocco Society, was that my grandmother, my mom's mother, with whom I had, an unbelievably close, loving relationship, was a very ill woman most of her life, but you'd never have known it. She was not a complainer. She was always happy. And she had spent a year in the hospital at one time when I was a little boy without a complaint. You know, it was just, she accepted it. She was coming into the house. My mother was helping her up, and she slipped and gashed her leg on the door jamb. She was diabetic. She had bad vascular flow. and she was already in her late 80s. And this is nearly, well, this is just last week, turned 31 years ago. So, I mean, it's quite a long, medicine isn't what it is, and 80-year-olds are a lot stronger than they were 30 years ago. And it ulcerated, and it looked remarkably like St. Rocco's wound. When my mother took her to the doctor said, you know, I think we'll need an amputation. And my grandmother's mother, the mother of 11 children, was an amputee. So she, that's the first time I ever saw her be frightened. She said, oh my God, I'll be crippled like my mother. And I said, don't worry, Grandma, I'll walk barefoot in St. Rocco's procession if he heals you. And she said, oh, Stephen, I don't want you to hurt your feet. And anyway, we don't even know where St. Rocco's procession is, because in 1958, when our original church of St., we say in the Lower East Side, St. Joachim, I know it's also pronounced St. Joachim, on Roosevelt Street, was demolished, we thought the feast ended, because our family had left the neighborhood to move to Brooklyn, and any contacts we had, we just assumed it was over. So although we prayed to St. Rocco, we didn't go to any feasts. And I had heard rumors of a feast in Glen Cove and rumors of a feast in Fort Lee. But, you know, I just, I was in my early 20s. I wasn't really a big driver then. I said, I don't know how I'll get there. Don't worry, Grandma, St. Rocco will show me a way. And remarkably, her leg was healed. The doctors, I remember myself putting this little antiseptic antibiotic cream on her leg, and the doctors were amazed. They said, this should not heal. She has no blood flow in her lower leg. She's diabetic. This should not heal. And it healed like baby's skin, I mean, quickly and rapidly. So the miracle was had. It was around June. It was near June 13th, my other buddy, St. Anthony. And I went to St. Anthony's procession in the village. I looked up at St. in Greenwich Village, and I looked up at St. Anthony. I said, look, I was studying for the bar exam. I think the bar or the LSAT. I can't recall which test it was at the moment. I said, St. Anthony, you have to help me with that. So a little of this barefoot is you, but share the rest with St. Rocco, because I have no clue what to do. I took my shoes off and I started walking. Two elderly Italian-American women were walking arm in arm, and I swear one's name was Tessie, because there's always a Tessie, nudges the other lady and says, Tessie, look at that kid. Look at that kid walking barefoot, like they used to do for Mount Carmel and St. Rocco. Yeah, she said, you remember St. Rocco, the big candles they carried on their heads and the huge candles they carried in their arms and the barefoot. And I turned to them and I said, yeah, isn't it too bad that doesn't exist anymore? They said, what do you mean it doesn't exist anymore? Go to Monroe Street on August 16th. They won't chase you. They'll love you. Go, go, go. And so I said, well, it's St. Joseph's Church, 5 Monroe Street. And, you know, they knew it. Well, that was June 13th. By August 16th, I made my way to found where Monroe Street was, because it wasn't the easiest place to find. And he came out. I took off my shoes, and the rest is history. A couple of years after doing it, Angelo Cannavale, may she rest in peace, the then treasurer and effective president who saved the society, grabbed me aside and said, hey, come here. You're going to join us. I said, well, how much does it cost, Angelo? $5 a year. I said, okay, I think I can handle that. And I became a member. And within a year, I became her confidant. And she made me, you know, basically help her plan it. But it was small. It was dying. It really was just the seniors that lived in the area that, unfortunately, by definition, are going to get less and less. And I said, St. Rocco, you did too much for us. I have to do more. I have to. This can't disappear. By that point, it was already a little over 100 years old. And I said to her, you have to let me do something to make this grow. Oh, no, no, we need to save the money. We have to give a donation to the church. And in those years, they'd give about $500 was their donation. So I said, all right, don't worry, Angela. And what I did was I paid for advertisement out of my own pocket, and I just didn't tell her because I knew she would get angry. She was also the bookkeeper for the church. She volunteered, and she caught me. What are you doing? You think this is the Stephen LaRocca Society? Why are you paying all this money? I said, Angela, because you won't give me 15 cents, so I have to do it. All right, here's a little money. And I continued to augment that with my own funds. But through advertising, word of mouth, and St. Rocco, well, God and St. Rocco made this miracle. We now, we're forced to be reckoned with the feast. It may not be anywhere near as you. My goal always, I want this to be, because my grandmother grew up on Roosevelt Street. The grandmother was healed. And she would say, Stephen, I'll look out the window. St. Rocco will come down the street, and all you'd see is his head. He'd be covered with money, and the hundreds and hundreds, perhaps thousands of people that marched behind him. And I wanted to bring it back. And Viva San Rocco, as we all say, he did it. And now I put all of our lives, my family, my society, and all their family members, and all of you in St. Rocco's hands. And I without doubt know that he'll get us through this. I just hope it gets to it fast so we have our August 16th, because this year we usually have it the Sunday after August 16th, but this year August 16th falls on a Sunday. So I'm praying that we're going to have a spectacular giant feast. And as my brother Marco Antonio says, people, you know, we better do a big, you guys that run San Rocco better make it big this year when he gets us through it. And we have every intention of doing so. And I hope people don't forget, because that's human nature. I love you. I love you. I love you until you get what you want. And then you forget. But I don't think we'll do that. I don't think so. Viva San Rocco, everybody. I think I've monopolized enough of the discussion, but
no, Steven, that was good, because you know what people, you know, you hear the names of these saints, San Rocco, Padre Pio, whatever, St. Michael, who are these people? But to really give a history about who this St. Rocco is, that's priceless. That really is. And I think it's a good segue to talk about some more saints. So
can I say something?
Yeah, of course you can.
This should be the St. Rocco show. No, because this is his moment. Can I just tell you something? And I think we should have another episode. You got to bring on Rosella. Rosella's great-grandmother was healed by St. Rocco. When I heard the story, I almost keeled over.
Really?
Yeah. I don't want to tell it, because I'm not going to tell it as good. Her grandmother is alive. It was her grandmother's mother. Mola di Bari is known for, Our Lady of Sorrows. But there's a big, big devotion to St. Rocco.
Oh, yeah.
Steve said, it all took off with the plague. And St. Rocco healed her grandmother, came to her in a dream. The doctors were astounded. A story similar to Steve's, I think it was cancer. I heard the story. And, I mean, had I heard it from anybody but somebody I trusted like Rosella, I never would have believed. There's so many, you know, St. Rocco, it's funny. Like, I was looking on I'm going to say Medigan, but all due respect. A Medigan traditional Catholic priest in Wisconsin, in a completely Medigan parish, which if I had to put money, probably like 40% Irish, 40% German, and 20% Polish, right? In the middle of nowhere, Wisconsin. He just renovated his church. It was built in the 1880s, and he renovated it to look exactly the way it did when the Germans built it back in 1880. He went and ordered a statue of St. Rocco and had it shipped to his parish from a church reclamation. Wow. And is building up a devotion and said to his parishioners, go to St. Rocco in this time of pestilence. And the reason I bring it up is I had talked to another priest friend of mine about, I said, if we get through this, as if the parish is spared, we were talking about getting a St. Rocco statue for his church. And I went on the church reclamation site, and there were so many St. Rocco statues from all those little Italian churches that are closed in Pennsylvania. And I said to myself, you know, it's funny. Who would have – everybody keeps saying, I never, ever could have imagined it, right? No one – this is like a really bad science fiction movie. Never, ever could have imagined it. And I was like, you know, I never could have imagined St. Rocco coming back into his own, because I think that, you know, the church after Vatican II walked away from so much of its tradition because, like, we outgrew it. Like, it was a medieval piety we kind of had to, like, turn our back on because it was embarrassing and all these things. And the truth is that it was eternal, because these guys never thought, you know, there was a talk about, there was some government agency, I forget what it was, and they were saying how in the last administration, they had basically scrapped, I don't know if that's strong language, but I'm paraphrasing an article I read, their preparedness for epidemic, because they were pumping all this money in epidemic. And the idea was after the SARS, after SARS didn't grow up to be as bad as everyone had feared, that they were like, you know, we're kind of past the age of epidemics. We should be pumping all this money into cybersecurity and cyber this and cyber that. And in case we ever have another pandemic, the doctors will take quick control, but this is a complete waste of time. And now all that preparedness is lost because the government stopped pumping, the last administration stopped pumping money into it. Because, and I can understand their argument. Their argument was, hey, listen, we don't need to worry about this anymore. We should be pumping this money into cybersecurity. And the reason why I think it comes full circle is it's the same thing with St. Rocco. I think a lot of people say, well, when are you going to get a plague again?
Mm.
You know what? Man plans, God laughs.
I always said that, you know, even with the, you know, Robert Rossini's book, Our Lady of Moncon, the Madonna of 115th Street, I think one of his theories was after the Second World War, Southern Italian Americans felt safe. You weren't going to get thrown in the street if you didn't pay your rent. There was more access to medical care. You didn't need Amarona to help you because, you know, America was helping you. And I think that's the modern thinking, you know, is that there's a solution through science and medicine for everything. And guess what? There ain't. And now we're going to have to go back to God and the saints because there are things. I mean, we never left, but plenty did. And I think it's our job to bring everybody back.
Amen. And
much as we can. We can't replicate 1910 Lower East Side, Newark, Chicago. I mean, we're not going to do that. I get it. But let's not forget, we have to hold on to this. This Southern Italian mentality, both in spirituality and just good common sense, was lost because people got spoiled. Well, guess what?
And Stephen, I want to jump in too. That's exactly right. And it's just interesting that this has only really happened in such a compound time frame. Like for thousands of years, hundreds and hundreds of years, everybody was, well, the devoted were devoted, but we've just within like the last 20 years really shifted so much because of technology and the media and everything else. We've gotten so far away from our traditions. And that's only happened in just the last 50 years, 20 years more so. But you're absolutely right. I totally agree.
May I interject a second?
Yes, of course. Go ahead, Marco.
No, I just wanted to say, my grandmother had a saying, and a lot of people won't agree with it, but she would say, "Nuboge miseria e necessaria." A little bit of poverty is necessary in everybody's life.
Because
it brings you back to the need for the saints, for God. A lot of people think because they don't doing well economically that they let their spirituality go.
Right. Because in a certain way, then the money becomes the God, or power becomes the God.
And the convenience is provided by money.
And this has given us a good humbling, too, what we're going through now, because all these people are getting on their knees again, and they're turning to God and the saints. So, you know, it's bringing us – we're bringing back – as bad as it is, and as much as we want it to go away – it's reinforcing old values and good, solid values.
Agreed.
But can I say something else? I want to defend the laity. I blame the priests and I blame the bishops. The responsibility falls at their feet. The bad priests and the bad bishops who laughed at the Italian woman walking barefoot in the procession and was embarrassed about
her. Yeah.
I was embarrassed of her devotion. Let me tell you a story. I don't want to get a priest friend of mine in trouble because he's very holy and devout. There's a certain town in the south of Italy that had a very strong devotion to a saint. And this saint saved them from a pestilence. It saved them from the Spanish influenza. They had they made a vow to the saint that they would have a procession or whatever every year if this saint, the patron of their town, spared them from the Spanish influenza. So they were spared. I think they had no deaths in the town at all. And because this was such a miracle, if you think about what the Spanish influenza was, they celebrate the feast day twice a year, once on the actual feast day, and they do once a procession in October recall
the miracle,
the last person in the town with Spanish influenza was here. So I went to the mass one year, and I'm sitting there. I was in Italy, and a priest invited me to go. And the bishop got up. Now, it was all old people in the church. I mean, the average age must have been 85. There's all old people in the church, and they're all there with, like, one grandchild. So the mother sent a grandchild, like, you know, oh, go take grandma or grandpa to church, make sure they don't fall. So there's, like, you know, 50, 80-year-olds and then 50 teenagers. What does the bishop go up and say? He doesn't say, wow, it's, you know, nothing to edify the kids. He goes up and says, "We are not here to be thankful for a miracle that saved this town from the Spanish influenza," which was in living memory at the time of the people who were there, or of, at least of their parents. They were all born about during the time of the Spanish influenza. He goes, "We're here to celebrate the achievements of modern medicine."
Yeah.
And just said, you know, God works through modern medicine. He basically sat, I sat there, I was going to walk out of the homily, because I was like, you know, I was so disgusted. But he basically told the kids, "You're right. You think grandma and grandpa are a bunch of ignorant, illiterate, unlettered superstitious.
Cavoni.
Right. And you're right. That the message to the kids was, you're right. And I thought to myself, and now I'm looking here, and I'm like, you know, who's laughing now? Because, you know, God has blessed us with so much science and technology, and we're so lucky. And we should use that to the best of our capacity. But God puts a limit on that just to remind us that he's God and we're not.
Right.
We're at that right now. And I just think to myself, and the reason I say it is, that bishop was so condescending of the people in those pews. Like I feel sorry for you, ignorant people. But when you die, then we're really going to become a modern progressive society of science. And my argument is, science and religion are not at each other's throats. That's another argument. You know,
no,
you know,
they never were.
They never were. And
well,
now,
sorry, Pat. Go ahead.
You know, and the I mean, there's what? There's more craters on the moon named for Jesuit astronomers than anybody else. I mean, it was a Belgian priest that came up with the Big Bang Theory. I mean, science is full of Catholic priests and religious who were scientists who made huge breakthroughs in science. The number one, in the 1960s, the number one group of American females with doctoral degrees were nuns.
So yeah, not just science, Catholic, but Christians in general as well.
You know, Tony, if I could just interject something.
Yeah, please, please.
It's not my turn, but, you know, and I'll get to more of my background when it's my turn, as I said. But I was in central Sicily a few years ago, and at Mass, at a daily Mass, and there were the regulars, you know, 10 to 15 older women. And the pastor of the parish said in his homily, well, you know, probably in 50 years, we won't be having daily Mass. We'll only be having Sunday Mass like the Eastern Orthodox. And probably within the same 50 years, we won't be carrying the saints. We won't be having processions. We won't be having these external expressions of popular piety and even liturgical ceremonies and devotions. And I mean, I can't say that I was flabbergasted. I can't say that I was surprised because, as Pat mentioned, it's this generation, well, not just one, but now two generations of these priests and bishops that are trying to impose this new regime without piety, without reverent devotions.
Faith, Brendan. That's the end. No,
they don't have supernatural faith. Exactly.
I do want to introduce Brendan, but I think now this is a good time to segue into who you're going to talk about, Brendan. And you wrote a great article a couple of years ago on CatholicFamilyNews.com about Santa Rosalia, the Sicilian miracle worker. So Eric has a pic. For those who can see us on YouTube or on the video stream, you can see the picture of Santa Rosalia. And really, reading your article, I mean, I know who Santa Rosalia is. I knew a little bit of her history, but you really, I think your article is one of the most in-depth articles about who she was as a person and then how she became a saint, which I was blown away. So can you tell, for those who never heard of Santa Rosalia, can you tell a little bit about her? Because she has a strong connection, just like San Rocco, she has a strong connection to the plague, the pestilence. So this is a great segue to talk about her.
Sure. Well, briefly, by way of introduction, despite my very non-Italian sounding name, my paternal grandmother, Concetta, was born and raised in the town of Musumeli, which is in central Sicily in the province of Caltanissetta. And I've had the happiness, really the fortune and the privilege of growing up in a bicultural and bilingual extended family, and also attending St. Anthony of Padua, which is our Madrice, the mother church of the Italian and the Italian-American communities of Western New York. It was one of the first Italian churches in the United States. It was founded in 1891 by the Scalabrini fathers and staffed by them until 2012. And just a really beautiful, traditional Italian church that some of our guests today have visited, and also very interesting church, unique church in the sense of, especially if you're in the United States, that four saints or future saints have prayed in our church. Blessed Giovanni Battista Scalabrini, who founded the Scalabrini Fathers, the missionary congregation for the Italian immigrants. Saint Luigi Guanella,
who founded the Servants of Charity and the Daughters of St. Mary of Providence, Mother Cabrini, St. Francis Xavier Cabrini, and finally, Venerable Nelson Baker, who was our diocesan vicar general, but is much more famous for his building the beautiful National Shrine Basilica of Our Lady of Victory that's just south of the city and his many works of charity. So anyway, growing up at St. Anthony's, I was always attracted to this beautiful statue of Santa Rosalia. And she has a crown of flowers, she's holding a Bible, she's holding a skull that really is the thing that most stands out to most people who see her. She's holding a Greek cross. And every September, immigrants from the province of Palermo, so the city of Palermo, Bagheria, which is kind of neighboring, and some other towns from the same province, but really all over Sicily, because she's an unofficial patroness of Sicily in general, would bring her down and place her in our sanctuary, and then we would have a procession and a luncheon and, you know, a typical Italian feast. Well, it wasn't until 2015 when I set out to really come to know Rosalia, to write that article that appeared in Catholic Family News and is available online on its website. It wasn't until 2015 that I really knew her whole story. And her father was a duke. He was Lord Sinibaldo, who was a vassal to King, I think it was Ruggero, Secondo Ruggero II of Sicily. And her mother was also a noble Guiscarda, descendant of Charlemagne. And anyway, so Rosalia was this Sicilian noble young woman. And eventually, to make a long story short, growing up, the king wanted to marry her off to someone else that had done a favor for him. It actually saved the king's life. And she refused. And then she made her way to either a Benedictine or a Basilian community of nuns, where she lived for a number of years, became a hermit, and made her way from Palermo to what is now known as the Santo Stefano Quisquina, the Sierra Quisquina, or this beautiful, one of the most beautiful places in all of Italy, particularly in the region of Sicily, where she lived as a hermitess for 12 years in a grotto, a very small grotto. And then after about 12 years, she made her way back to Palermo and then established herself on the top of the very famous Monte Pellegrino that the writer Goethe called the most beautiful promontory in the world. And so Rosalia lived her remaining years as a hermitess on top of Monte Pellegrino. She died and essentially was forgotten for about 500 years. So she died in about 1125 to 1130 and then was forgotten until, I believe, 1624. Essentially forgotten. And it was another saint, Saint Benedict the Moor, a Franciscan lay brother in Palermo's friary or convent of Santa Maria di Gesù, that actually prophesied that this plague would be coming, and shortly thereafter, the plague hit Palermo. And Palermo's traditional four patronesses, you can see their statues in that beautiful historic angle of the city called the I Quattro Canti. You see their statues. It's Christina, Alfa, Ninfa, and Agatha. The townspeople of Palermo invoked these traditional four patronesses, and for whatever reason, in God's mysterious providence and design, they were not delivered of the plague. Now, in the meantime, someone else had a vision and had been cured by Saint Rosalia and had gone up Monte Pellegrino after having received this apparition from the saint, or as she's affectionately known in Sicilian as La Santuzza, the little saint, and then was told that if they had fulfilled this vow, then she would deliver the, not only had healed the previous person, but then would deliver Palermo from the plague. And so eventually, after a lot of digging, Palermo was in fact delivered. But only after her recovered and then authenticated, recognized relics were processed through the city by the Cardinal Archbishop. And it's because, and Pat had just mentioned this other paese in southern Italy, it's a very similar case for Palermo, because St. Rosalia's feast day is September 4th. However, the anniversary of the finding, the discovery of her relics, and then, you know, taking them through Palermo, July 15th, has gone down in history. It's become her secondary feast that in many ways is even a bigger deal than her liturgical feast of September 4th, and that's called Festino, the little feast, that is kept to this day with great, great devotion by the Palermitani. And so Rosalia, unfortunately, like other saints, like San Rocco, like Santa Filomena, and others, has really been derided, has been dismissed as being this legend, or perhaps a historical Rosalia, like a historical San Rocco. Well, maybe they existed, but this whole cult, this devotion that's developed, you know, they're just to be dismissed because they're based on legends and everything else. So just throw out private revelation, throw out centuries-long devotions that have become immemorial customs. We don't need that. We don't believe it. We don't need it. So unfortunately, Rosalia has suffered the same fate, but the Sicilian people, the people, I vox populi, has always continued and persevered and preserved this beautiful devotion, especially in Palermo, in the city, and in the province of Palermo. And I've had the grace, really, to visit her shrines on Monte Pellegrino, in Santo Stefano Quisquina, and also in the Cathedral of Palermo, where her relics are solemnly enshrined. So growing up in Buffalo, in this beautiful Italian parish of St. Anthony, I came to know so many of these saints and Southern Italian popular piety and devotions, because these immigrants had transplanted and had continued these beautiful customs here. And when I went to, and I lived in Italy for about 3 years, in Rome and then in Sicily, and it was just, it was like this, well, going back to the roots of these things, but already these had been really tramandato, you know, really passed on to me, and I have this great love for these saints and for our traditions. And, you know, Tony, as you mentioned at the beginning, we need hope, especially in this time. And there's that Italian expression, finché c'è vita c'è speranza, as long as there's life, there's hope. And coming, those immigrants that I had just mentioned who had brought these devotions here, they knew coming here, both on the journey and then establishing themselves here, that they needed hope. They needed that hope and that trust in their patron, in the patrono, the patrona, to see them through. Otherwise, it was going to be too much for them. And so in Buffalo, just as in New York and in various parts of New Jersey and so many other places around the United States, these immigrants really recognizing that need that we feel now met with this epidemic, this pandemic, you know, they needed that hope. They knew where it was going to come from. It was going to come from on high. It wasn't going to come from the politicians or the doctors or whoever, or the scientists. Thank God we have them and we need them, yes. But and especially in this time, we need to recognize our inherent reliance on God and to receive that grace, to receive that divine favor. What better way than to ask from our traditional intercessors, the saints? And you can see in the background, we had mentioned before we went live, this quadro, or the image of St. Michael the Archangel. This is the original quadro that the immigrants from the city of Caltanissetta, which is the capital of the province with the same name in central Sicily, had brought with them. We had, unfortunately, it's no longer celebrated as such by the Niceni, by the immigrants of Caltanissetta. It's become more of a feast as insofar as he's the patron of law enforcement, so our local Italian-American Police Association celebrates him, St. Michael. I had found him in an antique shop in Buffalo.
Wait, hold on a second. The picture behind you.
Yes. So whatever, you know, third, fourth, fifth, whoever generation, you know, they no longer have this devotion. They had lost this devotion, and it ended up in an antique shop in Buffalo. We still have the banner from the society in our parish, but St. Michael, I mean, his two major apparitions in Italy, both on Monte Sant'Angelo, Monte Gargano in Foggia, in Puglia, and then, but something that has been brought up in these past few days and weeks was that apparition at the end of the 6th century. I think it was 590. Pope Pelagius had just died of this plague that was afflicting Rome, and Pope St. Gregory the Great was elected. And he held this procession. It happened to be on April 25th, St. Mark, the Rogation Days, on which traditionally processions are held anyway. But at the end of the Litany of Saints, Pope St. Gregory the Great had this apparition of St. Michael the Archangel. And then had Castel Sant'Angelo, the castle of the Holy Archangel St. Michael, erected just very close to the Vatican, down the Via della Conciliazione. And on top of the castello is this beautiful statue of St. Michael, who had delivered Rome in 590. To this day, you can see it. It's incredible. So I think Rosalia, especially from a Sicilian point of view, but just a Catholic point of view, you know, to nurture, to recover that devotion to her, who has never failed Sicily since you know, what was it, 1625. And then St. Michael, too, the greatest archangel. You know, we really need these saints. Just as you mentioned San Rocco, you know, you can never have too many saints. You can never pray too much. And they're all friends. So you don't offend one by praying to the other.
They don't get jealous of each other.
Exactly.
I don't know if it's not really, but an exorcist was talking about, he was doing an exorcism. And after and during the old rite of exorcism, there's a litany of the saints. And the woman who was freed commented to him, Father, like, you know, I guess because in they're under that kind of possession, they don't know what's really going on. She commented, she saw all these people walking into the church while he was doing this. And, of course, he was the only one in the church. And he said to her, he goes, that was all the saints coming to your aid as I called on them one by one during the litany of the saints.
Wow.
And oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just going to bring up,
yesterday, the Pope gave an extraordinary Urbi et Orbi blessing. Normally, it's just done for papal, you know, when once he's elected, he comes out. So a papal election, and then Christmas and Easter. Normally, otherwise, the blessing is not given. So it was really an extraordinary blessing with the plenary indulgence attached.
It used to be given on all the major holy days before 70. It was given on Nuncio.
But now, of course, you know, they did away with that too because it's too solemn and too beautiful and too traditional. So it normally happens only twice a year. So this was really an extraordinary thing now. But people noticed too, firstly, the icon of Our Lady Salus Populi Romani, the health or the salvation, the security of the Roman people that's normally kept in Santa Maria Maggiore, the major papal archbasilica of St. Mary Major. But also then, that beautiful crucifix, over 500 years old, that's venerated in the church of San Marcello al Corso, on the Via del Corso in Rome, that the Pope visited a few days ago and then had brought to the Piazza San Pietro, St. Peter's Square, to be exhibited, to be exposed during the blessing. But, you know, centuries ago, when Rome was afflicted by another epidemic, the Pope went and processed with that miraculous crucifix, and Jesus crucified then saved the eternal city. Unfortunately, we see in little places, in towns throughout Italy, and also here, some priests are going out, they're carrying the Blessed Sacrament in the monstrance, or a statue of the Madonna, or another saint, but we really need, on the part of the priests and bishops, a universal scale of penitential processions and devotions. Unfortunately, so many of them lack the spirit of supernatural faith, and we're not getting that. But that's why we as the laity need to turn to our saints, our patrons, because as Saint, as Sister Lucia, the survivor visionary of Fatima said, don't wait for the priests and bishops to call you to pray and to do penance. Go ahead and do it yourselves. In other words, don't hold your breath. So we need to be doing just that.
I think that, I wanted to kind of segue into you go first and then we'll segue into my question.
So I just find it really interesting because a lot of the disconnect might be in terms of, you know, the modern perception from the clergy, let's say, is that these are ancient customs and then they thus get attributed to being kind of antiquated, right? But the reality is, if you look at the modern day saints like Mother Cabrini, even Saint the Padre Pio, of course, but if you look at Mother Cabrini and some of the miracles attributed to her, people know her as being the saint of immigrants, and that she was born in Italy in 1850 and she came to America and she helped immigrants. I mean, that the story kind of just dies on the vine there, right? And it doesn't get too granular and no one really gets too into detail beyond that. But if you look at we're talking about the supernatural aspects of our religion and the mystery of faith and the things that can't be explained, which are the underscoring reasons for canonization, as we were talking about earlier. Eric mentioned, and Tony, you mentioned, you know, what's the criteria for becoming a saint? So there's a process, and a stringent one at that. There has to be a miracle or more than one miracle attributed to the saint, where there's no scientific explanation whatsoever. But just to talk about Mother Cabrini for a second and then to segue right back into that, she was born in 1850. She was the 13th child. It was said that right before her birth, literally right before her birth, the same day or hours before, there was a flock of doves over their home. She had an amazing life, and she actually there are miracles attributed to her which are very relevant today to what's going on with the coronavirus and everything else. And so she founded the Missionary Sisters of the Sacred Heart when she was about 30 years old. There were seven nuns. They started it in Italy, of course. And then in 1889, almost 10 years after she founded that order, the Pope at the time, Pope Leo XIII, asked her to go to the West to actually help the Italian immigrants there in a form of evangelization, but also to help them because there was a tremendous amount of xenophobia. Originally, she was intending, her intention was to go to the East, but the Pope Leo said, no, we need you in the West. She was born, and this is very, very important for at least me to correspond to what's happening now. She was born with a lot of health problems. She actually almost drowned when she was a child, and she had very weak lungs as a result of that throughout her entire life. And it's just ironic that she had to travel across the Atlantic 27 times in a time when seafaring wasn't very easy whatsoever. But nevertheless, she did it, and she grew up with, she grew up very ill. So when she arrived in America, her first order of business was actually to of course help the Italian immigrants who were really being treated terribly here, not only by their own church but by, you know, just the American people in general at the time. It was just a tough time for them. But ultimately what ended up happening was there was yellow fever. It was an epidemic of yellow fever, and that resulted in a tremendous amount of orphans. Quite, you know, so many of these young children, their parents were dying because of yellow fever, and they had no homes, no one to raise them. So Mother Cabrini was instrumental in building 67 institutions throughout the country, but many of which were actually orphanages, especially here in New York. And so I just find that to be a very, very important correlation to what we're dealing with here today, especially in New York, with the current epidemic that we're facing. But she actually won with the miracle that's attributed to Mother Cabrini, and she's done so much. I mean, she traveled throughout the entire country, and at a time when going from New York to Buffalo wasn't as easy as getting on a one-hour plane ride or hopping in your car and taking an eight-hour scenic drive from South State to Upstate. She used horse and buggy, and she went from here all the way across the country to the West Coast, to Seattle, all of these different places. She was a keen, keen businesswoman. She was able to facilitate the raising of capital like no other, to build hospitals and orphanages, buy plots of land, and dealing with real estate developers and all sorts of shenanigans and people that were very, very, very hard to deal with in terms of business, and that were always, frankly, looking to get over and make money. And they were in it for the economical aspect of it, but many of them, not all of them. And she was able to overcome that and still build these institutions nonetheless. But the miracle that happened was actually after she passed away in 1918. It was in 1921. It's amazing. The first hospital that she built here, the first child that was born, I should say, in the hospital that she built here, was Mother Cabrini Memorial Hospital. And he was an infant. Of course, he was a newborn. And I think he was at the time about a day old. One of the nurses put the wrong solution in the baby's eyes. It was a 51% solution of silver nitrate. They were only supposed to be putting a 1% silver nitrate solution in baby's eyes when they were born. It was just part of the process when they were a newborn. And unfortunately, what happened was it went in his eyes, this 51% nitrate solution, and it dripped down his cheek, and the baby was essentially blind. So it was horrifying to the doctors and the other nuns of her order. They immediately took a piece of her habit that they had, and they pinned it to the infant's clothing, and they all went to pray for 48 hours for a miracle, for her intercession. And believe it or not, 48 hours later, miraculously, the baby was completely cured of the blindness. But the second miracle happened right away thereafter. Immediately after the blindness was cured, and this baby had beautiful blue eyes and would then grow up to become a priest, the baby came down with pneumonia, which is another incredible correlation to what we're dealing with here today with the COVID virus. And so they again prayed for her intercession. This child, the baby, the infant had a 107 degree fever. And then again, miraculously within a day, the baby was fine and went on to grow up to become a priest. Father Peter Smith, and then one of his brothers was also a priest. The baby was dying of double pneumonia, and so it was also a function of the nitrates, searing his lungs that went through his nasal passages and so on after the terrible tragedy at the hospital. But that's something that gets lost in translation. Again, when we're talking about saints and what have you, and when it comes to the things that happen in the Catholic Church and, these miracles, because we're not only venerating the saints of 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, there's these miracles that occur within our century, within the last 100 years. And these all they fall through the cracks. And this is the stuff that really is so important to focus on and to bring forth and bring light to, not just say, St. Rocco is the saint of disease, or so-and-so is the saint, St. Anthony is the saint of lost articles. I mean, this stuff is all very, very superficial. We need to get down into the details, and that's where all of this really lies. And so through the canonization process, it's a very, very important to realize that the reason why these saints become saints is because there are no scientific explanations. And now with science being what it is, especially within the last 100 years, it's so important to really have a value for the supernatural aspects of what these saints' powers are and their intercessions. So with that, I also wanted to introduce, not many people know about him, but a young boy who passed away in 2006 at the age of 15 years old, named Carlo Acutis, the Venerable Carlo Acutis. He was an Italian teenager. He was a computer programmer. And I came to know about him because of the Italian Enclaves Historical Society, as I was building out the archives that I have of photographs of Italian national parishes, Italian churches, and also of all the Italian neighborhoods in America. I stumbled upon his work, which was really, really intriguing at such a young age, 12, 13, 14 years old. He built a website which cataloged all of the Marian apparitions, all of the Eucharistic miracles that have happened throughout the world. And he just in February was approved by the Pope for canonization. The beatification process is actually expected to take place in Assisi, and that's where he's buried. And so his miracle that's been attributed was the healing of a Brazilian child suffering from a really rare anatomic anomaly of the pancreas, and this was in 2013. So the Medical Council of the Congregation for Saints and Causes, they gave up what they call positive opinion of the miracle last November. So they put everything through this process, and if there can't be any explanation medically or scientifically, then it's deemed a miracle. And of course, there are other aspects to it, but it's a very stringent process. So nevertheless, I wanted to point this young man out because he grew up as very pious, went to church every day, received the Eucharist, said the rosary as often as possible, if not every day, and went to confession once a week. He's, again, a modern saint. So you have these ancient saints like Saint Rocco, Saint Anthony, Santa Rosalia, mirroring in their supernatural capacities the modern saints like Saint Mother Cabrini, Saint Francis Cabrini, and now soon to be Carlo Acutis. And this is all very, very important because if you look, we don't have to pray to just one saint to cure anything or for anything. We could pray to them all. And this is something you guys said earlier. And it's so important to give some light to all of these different saints and the amazing miracles that they've promulgated throughout the thousands of years of our religion and throughout the world. That's really what I wanted to say. I think it's so important to pay attention to that. And Mother Cabrini's works are still manifesting in all of the institutions she created throughout the country. They're still there.
I mean, as of last week, Cardinal Dolan was at her shrine up in Fort Washington,
beautiful.
Yeah, Washington, so, I mean, right. It's like you said though, but really we do have so many saints, so many holy people that we can go to for help. And I think that this is a good segue to talk a little bit to Mark Antonio. So I know Marco, he is very devoted to two in particular. One's the Mother of God under the title of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, but he's also devoted to Saint Anthony. So, Marco, I want you to give us some of your input into this whole discussion we're having today.
Sure. Well, my experience is much more of a personal experience than anything intellectual. I never really – I couldn't explain it to you in liturgical terms or anything like that. What it is Saint Anthony is my patron saint. Well, it's been so. But the thing is, people in life choose their patron saint. For some reason, they identify with a particular saint. This didn't happen to me at all. Saint Anthony chose me.
Amen.
And how did that happen? From when I was born, before I could say recognize, before I could speak in sentences, my grandmother, every Tuesday, had a statue of Saint Anthony on the kitchen table with a little lumine or a little candle lit in front of it, and she would say the chaplet, Coroncina di Sant'Antonio. And every Tuesday she would repeat this. And around the corner from me was a chapel to Saint Anthony, which the society maintained, Saint Anthony Society, and my aunt would take me by the hand every day, and we'd go in there, kneel, and say our prayers. But the funny thing is, I asked my grandmother, Grandma, finally got around to asking her, why do you light the candle to St. Anthony every Tuesday? And, what's the meaning behind it? She says, well, I'll tell you the truth. I think it's something called phlebitis. Is it a disease where her arm blew up twice the size? And the doctors, of course, it was another case like Stephen explained earlier. It was a case where they recommended amputation. And my grandmother, stubborn old Neapolitan lady, she says, no, what I was born with, I'm going to die with. And so anyway, days passed. My grandmother went through her suffering, and she probably was paying her dues, like we all do. And all of a sudden, she gets a dream in the night, and St. Anthony takes a bandage and bandages her arm up. And, you know, she woke up in the morning and all the swelling and all the fluid was gone from the arm.
Wow.
So that's why every Tuesday she had lit the candle to St. Anthony. And when I was, like I say, like I was small, they would have the feast around the corner also. But I do know St. Anthony's life story. I could give you some tidbits, but St. Anthony's a very well-documented saint. So I won't take up too much time with that on account that anyone could rent the film on his life. Anyone could find a book. Just go to Autom. That's a Catholic. I'm sure you're familiar with it, right? The Catholic company that sells all the books and videos. Mm-hmm. And but he was actually Portuguese. So I tell people my best friend was Portuguese. And they said, what do you mean by St. Anthony's Portuguese? A lot of people, that's a common fact to people like us, but the average person doesn't know that. He performed miracles so much to the point that he even spoke when people wouldn't listen to his preaching. The fish at Rimini came up from the water and listened to his preaching.
Wow.
The story I like the best, though, because I'm a mama's boy, as there was a boy, he went to confession to St. Anthony, and St. Anthony said to St. Anthony, one of the sins was I kicked my mother. Well, St. Anthony got enraged because that's another thing we have in common. We have a raging temper, but we get over it. So anyway, St. Anthony said the leg that you kicked your mother with should fall off. And accordingly, the leg fell off. Whether this is legend or not, I couldn't tell you, but I believe it. And St. Anthony was forbid by the bishop to perform any more miracles. He says, hey, you're getting too much notoriety here. You know, let's calm down a little bit. So St. Anthony, the kid's leg is on the ground, and St. Anthony's feeling so bad. So he runs to the bishop and says, can I do just one more miracle? And he said, go ahead. And he restored the kid's limb, you know, to back to being purposeful. And that's the story of St. Anthony with me. Now, the Blessed Mother is another story because that's another personal story. My mother, before I was born, I was supposed to be born 4th of July, and she was late. And the doctor said, this is not going to be a good pregnancy. There's something wrong. Maybe the boy, it seems like the baby has water on the head. So my mother says, oh my God, what am I going to do? I was late. They thought maybe I was going to be born stillborn. You know, so many terrible things. So my mother, at that time, the church in Manhattan on 115th Street, Our Lady of Mount Carmel, had a novena preached on the radio by Father Domenico Pistella. I'll never forget him. He said the whole novena in Italian. My mother made the novena for the 9 days, and wouldn't you know, I was born July 16th. Right on the and at what time? Right on the Feast of Amarone Rugar. And what happened at that time?
She
was
should
born
named
exactly,
you Carmine.
Carmelo.
I for confirmation. I took Carmine for confirmation. And what happened was I was born exactly at 11 o'clock. And what happens at 11 o'clock? The Madonna would exit the church exactly at 11 o'clock. Not the actual Madonna on the altar, but, you know, the alternative Madonna, which is taken out every year because the Madonna on the altar was considered such a miraculous image that she was only allowed to leave the altar. At that time, they told us every 25 years. Now, in my modern times, I've seen her come out about 10 times, so they must have relaxed the restrictions. But so that's my personal experience with Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Now, as far as this epidemic is concerned, Well, I'm dedicating my prayers, my novena, mainly to the Blessed Mother for a good reason. As you know, my grandfather came from the town of Pietrelcina, which is the town where Padre Pio was also from. Now, Padre Pio, like Raymond just explained, modern-day saints, Padre Pio was so well-documented. So I'm saying this because the Madonna della Libera, Our Lady of Deliverance, who is the patroness of Pietrelcina, liberated them from a plague, not in ancient times. I would call it not even semi-ancient, 1855. So that somebody like my grandfather's father or grandfather could recount the story word by word, event by event, what happened at that time. So it's something we know is not legend. It really happened. And what happened was, as you know, in southern Italy, there were a lot of outbreaks of cholera. It's a common thing back then. And the town of Pietrelcina was stricken by a terrible cholera. People were actually dying in the streets. And they decided, like they did, Pat had mentioned another town earlier, to take the image of the Madonna, the wooden image, and process her through the streets, hoping that the disease would flee in her path. And sure enough, this happened on December 3rd of 1855. On December 4th, as I'm watching these charts every day, it reminds me of that, with the numbers, how they go, and we're waiting to reach a peak, and then it's, they say it's going to decline. That's just what happened there. As of December 4th, the cases started going down, so as at the end of the week, there were no new cases of cholera reported, and nobody else died from cholera. So that's why it's a particular, right now it's of particular importance to me to remember this event and the way my grandparents recounted it to me and so on.
Marco, that was beautiful. And I just wanted to also say too, it's, they have, I mean, my life personally, I've definitely, been the benefit of intercession, and you just don't want to get into the details of it, but those stories are beautiful, and these are the things that really create the devotion. And especially, I will say this, since I met Stephen LaRocca and Marco, and I've taken part as a in the procession of St. Rocco, I must say, these things, these devotions are not just random. And the most important thing is that once, if you make a vow and you are the benefit, you do receive the grace of one of these saints, to not just give it up, not just say, all right, thanks, and run with it.
No.
Like a thief in the night. It's just to remain devoted.
It anchors you in the faith. You know, we all, I don't know if everybody hears about the dark night of the soul. You know, when your prayer life becomes dry. And you start to, even Mother Teresa went through this quite a bit. She's, you know, she felt this terrible dryness, this terrible, like she wasn't getting any response from God. And I went through the same thing at one time. And the funny thing is, EWTN, I was watching it one night, and it talked about adoration of the Eucharist, which I got to be honest, and I'm actually ashamed to say, at that age, I didn't even know what it was. So then I found out, yeah, there's a church. What happens is I see the commercial again, and I said, I got to find out where this adoration takes place. And who, at the end of, there was no other saints in this church that was in this commercial, but at the back of the church was a statue of St. Anthony. So there again, I even believe that he healed me in faith. So it's all personal for me. There's I don't want to say personal in the fact that I don't pray for other people, certainly. And I like to give the testimony to give other people faith. Amen. But I'm sure if with a strong faith and if we all pray hard, no matter who you pray to, your prayers are all going to the same source.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Amen. Amen. And that's an interesting point, because, you know, like you said, the saints, whether they're modern, whether they're ancient, they still play a very important role in our daily lives. And again, they can heal us in physical ailments and mental ailments and spiritual ailments. And I think that it's important. I want to talk a little bit to Patrick, because Patrick has an interesting story, kind of off topic from the epidemic, but he's very devoted to a special.
That's a whole other episode, Anthony.
But no, I just want.
It's a whole. It's a whole other episode. It's a whole. It's a whole. It really is. I mean, that's a whole.
Come on, Pat.
It's 12:23. We've had him on. No, I'm being honest with you. It's an hour and a half. I'd rather do a whole episode
dedicated to that.
Yeah, if you don't mind.
No, that's fine. But just mention who she is, because maybe people never heard of her.
There's two stories I would go into. One is Saint Anthony. My grandmother's mother had my great aunt and my great uncle were dying, I guess, of pneumonia. And this had to be around 1911. And I think the doctor said, you better give up on them, you know. You only there, and she had three kids at the time, so she was a young mother, three children. And two of her three children are dying. And she made a vow to St. Anthony that if they were healed. And what she did was she dressed them. And this was common. You don't see this anymore. She dressed them in the Franciscan habit of St. Anthony.
Me and Marco were talking about this last night.
Every day. Yeah, every day. Yeah. Until they were communion age. And they wore the rope. The special thing was that
Franciscan. Every day. Wow.
Yeah, every day. Yeah. They were dressed like St. Anthony. And my great grandmother never ate meat on Wednesday, and a lot of people do that even from Mount Carmel.
A lady monk, really? Saint Anthony is Tuesday, isn't he?
Yeah, but they did it. They never ate. I guess because it was like the traditional fast days were Friday and Wednesday. We never had meat on Wednesday. And my grandmother's sisters kept it going. My grandmother's family, us, we're the only branch that keeps it going. I don't think my cousins would even have any idea about the story. And my grandfather, what follows is in the 1960s, my grandfather was, he had his appendix burst on Christmas Eve. And by the time they got him to the hospital, they got the doctor, the poison was all through him. And the doctor came out and said, because my mother's an only child, said to my grandmother and my mother, he's not going to make the night. You better call the undertaker and make arrangements. He'll be dead by the morning. And they renewed the vow to St. Anthony, and my grandfather came home fine.
Wow.
The other story is, and that's on my grandmother's side. On my grandfather's side is Our Lady of Sacramento, Madonna Ramon. But I prayed, I asked for a favor, I got the favor, and I said to her, if there's anything I can do for you to pay you back, I'll happily do it. And a statue showed up in my life. But that's a whole other story.
And that's an episode for sure.
That's an episode.
Before we conclude this episode,
can I say one positive thing?
Yeah, go ahead. Of course.
God brings good out of a tragedy. And I hope that all the almost 10,000 Italians who've passed are in a much better place than here. One thing I've seen in Italy is I saw in the last 10 years in Italy, I would say the devotion to the saints amongst the people who aren't very old, it was almost folklore, like, you know, Santa Rosalia or San Gennaro or San Dandoni is the patron of our town. It's almost like a mascot, you know, like, I'm a Yankee.
Exactly. Fan.
And there was no devotion. And the procession every year was a folklore parade. And I have seen explode on Instagram and Facebook. Italy is on its knees praying.
Good.
So Italian, I mean, I first saw it on Instagram when this began for the city of Bronte in Sicily, the famous capital. I saw Bronte's Instagram posted on San Biagio, St. Blaise, who's the patron of Bronte. And someone wrote on Instagram, you know, in Sicily, St. Blaise, you saved us from this epidemic and that epidemic. Save us now. And I was like, wow, who would imagine hoity-toity, uppity, nose in the air, snobby Italy is now asking San Biagio for a miracle. And then I have seen so many Italian towns and Italian people on their Instagram and on their Facebook, really begging for miracles. You know, this saint, that saint, Madonna to this, you know, Madonna with this title, that title, you know, save us, protect us.
Especially Northern Italy.
I'll be honest with you. I don't have as many. I mean, I know a lot of people in Northern Italy. I don't follow as many people up there. I don't know what's going on up there. I can say the South, I absolutely have seen the sea change.
Eric, I think you wanted to add to that, right? You wanted to see?
I mean, I just want to add to the St. Anthony conversation that Marco Antonio was talking about. Marco Antonio, I don't know if you've ever been or participated in the Tredicina, that Holy Family Church in Nutley does.
But well, we have, with our society, we have the Tredicina.
It is beautiful. I mean, if you're on the Jersey side, I highly recommend it at Holy Family in Nutley. They start on June 1st, and they run the whole 13 days.
Really? At what time, do you know?
They do it at 7 o'clock at night, and they do the entire novena from Padova. And the woman, I mean, and Pat could tell more about this, the woman who runs it now, Tarantino, tremendous story with related to St. Anthony. And even just to get to Raymond's point about Mother Cabrini, who worked in Newark for 4 years, and she established the first
Mount Carmel.
Right. She established the first school for Italian immigrants in the state of New Jersey at our parish, because we're the third oldest in the state. I just wanted to make those two.
Oh, Eric, by the way, the tour that you gave me of Our Lady of Mount Carmel in the Ironbound down neck, right? It was amazing. And there was that statue. Didn't you show me her house where she lived for a while?
Yeah, so she lived across the street. And it's right. Actually still there. It's a dentist's office on the first floor, and now it's apartments. But yeah, she lived right there.
It was the old church too, like across the street, wasn't it? Right.
Correct. Yeah, it was a Dutch Reformed church, and then it became Catholic.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Still there.
That, you see, even that. I mean, that's a whole other episode. But to talk about Down Neck Newark, because that really was another stronghold of the Italian community. Started from what people from Buccino and no, Nocera, right? Nocera.
Buccino.
Nocera.
San Gregorio Magno.
Excuse me, didn't they have the feast of the Madonna di Mater Domini there?
They had Mater Domini, they had Monteverge, they had a lot of
feasts. Oh, sure. Beautiful.
That's another episode, Eric.
But Eric, just a quick question for you. I wanted to just ask you about your family's from a town in Calabria called Spillinga, right? Am I saying that right? I always say it wrong. I always say Spillinga wrong. So there is two devotions there, right? San Michele and Madonna di della Fontana.
Madonna della Fontana. You know, it's funny. And are actually the official town patron is Saint John the Baptist, and unfortunately he gets no credit. But Saint Michael the Archangel. He according to legend, my grandmother had told me. The town more than once. I think once during the Saracen Wars, he appeared over Spillinga, and you know they were afraid and they didn't go there. And another time, I can't recall, and I'm ashamed that I can't recall this, but I have to remember this story. But Saint Michael is very big, so we celebrate him still. And Madonna della Fontana, who is kind of similar to Pat's story of Sacromonte, in that it was just an image that was discovered by a simple woman, and it turns out that it was in a little cave. And this lady had a dream, and it was the Madonna, and she said, come get me out of here. There's water here. Everybody thought she was crazy. She went down. She found the Madonna. They brought her up to the town. This is 1889 or so. And it probably was placed there by some Basilian monk. So getting to this culture and identity of the Basilian monks that Brandon was talking about in Sicily. So interesting.
They were in Novi Velia. They were the monks also in Sacromonte. That
was, yeah. As well. San Cono in Tegiano too.
There's a strong there's a strong correlation or connection between the Basilians, and it seems like there is a strong connection between the Basilians and Southern Italian towns and culture.
Because of the Greek influence, right?
Definitely.
And actually today, I mean, I kind of end on this. Today is the feast of San Cono Abate, which is the patron of Naso in Sicily. And Stephen, you said that on his banner, what does it read?
All right, I'll take too long to find the picture, but he is also patron of a town called San Cono in Catania province, and he has a staff, and on the staff is a ribbon, and in Latin it says, free us of plague, famine, and war. So I think he's very apropos for today that you should bring him up, because...
Yeah. And he was a Basilian,
and he's in the black robes. The statue looks a little different than the one from Naso. More realistic, And yes, he's a Brazilian monk, you know, a bishop's mitre at his feet. So I imagine at one time they asked him to be a bishop and he probably refused.
Well, I think that is a great way to end this conversation, is to ask for the intercession of San Cono and all these beautiful saints, Santa Rosalia, Mother Caprini, San Rocco, you know, whoever we feel is on our heart, San Padre Pio, who I'm wearing today. I'm wearing double. I got his hat on, I got his shirt on. So it is so important. We didn't mention him, but I have him up here. Santi Medici. That's another one we could be praying to because they were doctors. So, gentlemen, I want to thank you so from the bottom of my heart. I know that we're all kind of in quarantine, so we probably have a little extra.
Thing. I just want to thank you because you are an essential worker, as you mentioned earlier today. I want to thank you and all of the essential workers. And if good's going to come out of this, is that we could really respect and honor the people that are on the front lines of this epidemic, but also moving forward, that we don't lose sight of this ever. And it brings us all closer. But thank you, Tony. Really.
Thank you, gentlemen. But again, I want to thank you so very much for taking time out of your, you know, like I said, I know we're climbing the walls after a while, but I do want to thank you. You still have things to do around the house, but thank you for taking time out on a Saturday morning to sit down with
Anytime.
Me.
Anytime.
God bless you guys. God bless your families.
God bless you, Tony.
You too. God bless you.
Please
God
stay
bless
safe. You, I'm sorry, Marco.
Amarone da Cumbagna.
Veramente.
Beautiful.
That's a Neapolitan greeting.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. Anyone someone leaves the house, you say so long. Amarone da Cumbagna.
Every day when I left for school, my grandmother said that as I walked out the door.
Really?
Right.
But again, we'll have to do some, because there is so much more we could talk about with the saints. So we definitely have to do something else in the future. But like I said, this is kind of a new venture, a new project that I've been working on, is to try to, you know, hopefully I'm on the next episodes, I'll be getting some people that are involved in the restaurant industry and how they've been affected, because they've been affected big time by this pandemic, by this plague. So again, this is a kind of a work in progress. This is separate from my regular podcast. This is more of a visual podcast where we could talk and see each other's faces, because I miss all your beautiful faces. I love you guys. And it's good to see.
Likewise, Tony.
It's good to see you. Obviously, yes, Brendan.
God willing, we'll all be together at San Rocco's feast come August 16th.
I hope.
Amen. But again, gentlemen, thank you so very much. God bless you. We'll see you soon. We'll talk to you soon, and be safe. Ciao for now.
At the Table with Tony would like to thank its sponsors: Rocco Muriale, Rob Quick, Joseph Cirillo, Raymond Guarini, Tom Gilmore, Oli G, Peter Ziza, Brian McGuire, Peter Ferreira, Rich Ottenstrauer, Anna Mavrianos, Antonio Pepinella, Anthony Ferraro, Sandra and Bob LaMotta, Mike Guerro, The Italian Enclaves Historical Society,